Hey everybody, it's Adam here on another edition of the new PNEU podcast. Same old podcast, but it's still new. And I am super stoked because I am chatting with one of the first woman in my series of women who rock. I just think my wife, you know, is getting more and more to cycling. These are people she needs to know, in my opinion, and people that just generally you need to know what's going on. And this woman is a Olympic level masseuse, I think I can say, an accomplished frame builder, an advocate for people on bikes, but I would say specifically women, or especially women, a mechanic and the owner of Frontier Bikes in Eudora, Kansas, Beth Morford. How are you, Beth?
Hey, Adam, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. See, I know things. I was telling her before we started recording, I actually do a little research here. can you tell me about we'll get into the bike stuff, right? Like bike stuff, obvious. Japan Olympics, is that where you are a sports massage therapist, correct? That's the term?
That is the term, sports massage therapist, yes.
Yeah, and you were pretty good at it, apparently. Tell me what's up with that. Because I think that's wild.
Yeah, Tokyo is the next one. It's this year. I'm not going to that one because I semi-retired. I paused, I would say, that career. I was the sports massage therapist for Team USA in Rio. I was one of four in the Olympic Village in the condo that the team stayed in. I was down on the main floor just churning and burning soft tissue treatments for 12 to 15 hours a day. And that was the finale to a career that lasted probably, I don't know, 12 to 15 years before that. And it's there were a lot of hoops I had to jump through to get to that point. But man, I've got some pretty cool rings that I get to wear now.
You had America in your hands, literally. I don't think I can say that for too many people, you know, four that year or whatever.
You know, when people Facebook message you and they're like, were you the one that cupped Michael Phelps? I'm like, boy, is this the pinnacle of my career? No, I was not the one who cupped Michael, but boy, was he around, that's for sure. And Team USA, that was kind of the peak. Before that, it was USA Swimming on the road for several years, and lots of Division I programs like KU men's basketball and swimming programs and things of the sort. So that's yeah, so it cool. Was it was the dream. It was the dream.
Yeah, that's I guess I don't really know. I mean, but that's got to be like the elite of the elite for sports massage therapy, right? Like it doesn't get bigger than the Olympics in sports.
No, it does not. No, it does not. It's like the athletes are allowed to, when they make it to that point, they're allowed to get the Olympic rings tattooed. If you're a provider or support staff, you're not allowed to, because you're not competing as an athlete, obviously. Sure. But I did get some bands around my wrist that are blue and red that as my, you know, signature. Yeah. I did it. Yeah, there was a lot of casual conversation with athletes on tables. That's, you know, you build some rapport with those members of the team, and they're sort of family after a while. You're on the road internationally, you know, just enduring long flights and hauling bags around for everyone, and you're having breakfast with them, and you know, you're swimming out in open oceans with them in the morning sometimes, and it's cool, and it's it just becomes a tight-knit kind of family. You know, I'm still friends with a lot of Team USAers on Facebook, and we keep in touch, and coaches and such. And so, yeah, you develop relationships with those people, and it's neat. It's and maybe I'll go back to it one day part-time. I don't know. I keep it in my back pocket. I'm still young, and I got energy, so who knows?
Yeah, that's just crazy. And there has to be trust, right? Because I'm sure everything in that regimented of the dedication to get close to there, let alone to be there. If I didn't trust somebody, they wouldn't be physically touching me, you know, like that has to be an implicit level of absolute trust and understanding.
Yeah. They, you know, there's a level of trust. There's that, they don't just let anyone work on them. Athletes are very superstitious.
Yes.
Very superstitious. I've worked with some programs, including KU men's basketball, where things are regimented and they're done a certain way because that's how they've always done it. And that's what brings them success.
So you keep doing what you're doing, you know, like if it's still working, we're not changing a thing.
That's right. And unless something happens along the way where, you know, you were part of a huge success that like was outside of their norm, they're not going to change it. They're, you know, and that's sort of one of those things where you're like, I'm just going to be quiet and do my job and say, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. And follow the rules. And that's really how you become successful with USA Swimming, is you go in, you be quiet, you do your work, you watch, you observe. And you schlep bags and Gatorade and you do all the grunt work, and that's just your role on the team. That's what you do. And if they are successful along the way, then you get to enjoy some of that too. So
do we say you earn your stripes?
Yes.
I get
earn your stripes.
How about that's so cool. I'm so glad we talked more than what I thought about that. How about we fast forward a little bit to a situation that you've put yourself in where they are your rules and you do essentially what you want, and it's with a community around and people, but it's your vision. We said right at the beginning, you are the owner of Frontier Bikes in Eudora, Kansas, which is tagged, I see, with woman owned and operated, which is what's up. And before we even talk about Frontier, one thing that I think, you know, bike shops, right? It's being talked about. I've been in the industry a long time. It's been talked about forever. Like discrepancies in gender. It is what it is. It's 20, you know, maybe not 20 years, but I cannot remember a time that I was in bikes that people weren't failing miserably at accommodating women. Whether they shrunk and pinked it, that doesn't work as much in the past tense. Whether they put butterflies and flowers, whether they went full end, other end. What do you think?
Women specific geo.
Right. Calling it out, making it so different, you know, I get you. But talk to me before we talk to how Frontier directly addresses that stuff and can serve every single person. From like a customer, did you have experiences without like throwing anybody under the bus, you know, do you have experiences where you were just left like, I know you did, because I hear from every lady I talk to, basically, you know, that you were just like, man, the craving that I want for more people just getting out of my way to let me into the cycling industry as a consumer, as a mechanic, as whatever. Was there things that you can kind of pinpoint that you're like, I just got to do it my own way. This ain't going to work in the structures that exist.
You mean like one specific pivotal moment where I was like,
A culmination of just like, dang, every time I leave the bike shop, I want to spend money or this or that. And I get mansplained to, which I'll touch on a fun thing later. Yeah. And, you know, or just it, I don't get treated like I could have $10,000 in my pocket and I get showed a $700 hybrid bike or a $400 hybrid bike. It happens and I freaking hate it. But, you know, like maybe that's a culmination of things where you're just like, okay, enough is enough. I'm doing this. And if I'm not crazy, you know, if it's happening to me, it's happening everywhere kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I haven't necessarily been in the bike industry long enough for things to culminate. I started riding bikes. I mean, I rode, you know, 90s mountain bikes, you know, rigid mountain bikes back in the 90s, because I was a teenager in the 90s. And in college, I was more of a runner than a cyclist. And then a family member got me on a Nash Bar cyclocross bike, like late 2000s. And it was too big for me. And I didn't understand why I had so much pain. I didn't understand that there was sizing issues. And I know I'm a petite person. So I ended up selling it on Craigslist. And, you know, just the whole trying to find bikes that fit me, trying to go into shops that trying to ask advice and get answers from people that worked at the shops about how to fit to a petite rider. And they would show me, I think a shop showed me kids bikes once. I'm 5'3". I'm not super short by any means, but, you know, talking to men about things like saddle fit, you know, and what's a woman's body do when it's on a bike, for how's it feel, you know, how do our women parts feel after 100 miles of gravel, or even, you know, what kind of chamois should I buy? I don't want to talk to a guy about a chamois, you know, how's the chamois in those bibs?
What am I going to tell you? Fits yeah. me real good. I'm 200 right. pounds, you know, like what do I, it's not the same. No, offense to me. Same. It just isn't the same.
No, it's not the same. No. Yeah. And so it was just little things that I noticed, where I was like, boy, I can't talk to a guy about how my chamois fits. And I don't want to talk to a guy about chamois cream and lathering up my bits. And I don't want to talk to a guy about, you know, maybe nutrition is a little bit different for women in the way that our body processes nutrition, or, you know, I just, those little things I started to think about. And then I found a bicycle, an old vintage Pook bicycle, that road bike that also was too big for me. And I think this was probably the turning point for me. This was, 2014 or 2015. I went into a bike shop and I had a pile of parts in a bike, and I'd taken the parts off, but I didn't have tools to put it back together. I didn't know anything about torque specs and greasing, threading and things like that. And, I took this big box into this bike shop. I was like, can you teach me? You're like, I need tools, but I don't have money to buy all these tools. Can I use yours? And they were like, yeah, we're not really interested in taking on an apprentice right now. And I was like, all right. And then I went into another bike shop maybe a year later, and the owner was a frame builder. It was Velo Plus. It was Vincent Rodriguez.
Yep.
Cool guy, very open-minded, down to earth. And I said, listen, I've got this bike. I want to learn how to put bikes together and work on my bike, because I don't want to, I'm tired of going into shops and not, I don't like feeling dumb. You know, sure. I want to know how to fix it. I want to figure it out on my own, or have someone teach me so I can keep doing it on my own. And Velo Plus happened to have open shop nights.
Awesome. And like rent a bench kind of thing?
It was free.
Oh, yeah. Wednesday but night. Just like you got bench space and tool access. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
Sling your bike up into a repair stand, use their tools, and a mechanic will be there to answer any questions or help you with things. And man, I dug that. I loved that. And you could hang out with other cyclists, and they were there, and you could drink beer. And I thought, man, this is cool, but boy, I don't want to work for someone. I've never worked for someone. I mean, I've always followed the rules and had to obey rules and listen to coaches and teams and such, but I was a sole proprietor with my massage practice, and I made the rules and my work schedule and things like that. And so I thought, when I went to the Olympics in Rio, I talked to Kristen Armstrong, mm-hmm. Mara Abbott, both those ladies that I had the privilege of working on. They were both, at the time I was working in Velo Plus, you know, apprenticing. And when I was in Rio, they were like, dude, you should be a soigneur. Like, we don't have very many female soigneurs in the world that have the soft tissue skill, know about nutrition, have some wrench skills. Like, and then
a gamut there.
Yeah. I had more skills than the usual mechanic did.
Right.
I took that advice. I sort of did my research. I talked to a soigneur at the Olympics, and this guy was beat up, dude. He was like, I'm on the road 10 months a year, and I pretty much don't sleep, and no one appreciates me. And I was like, wow, he's really selling it. I should.
Maybe that's his job protection mentality. He just tells everyone how much it sucks, so then he lays on like really comfortable mattresses. He figured it out.
You know, cyclists have a lot of money, right? Like the pros have some cash to spend, and I'm thinking, man, he's probably staying at the Ritz-Carlton, that liar.
Yeah, right.
He just looked wrecked, and it turned me off. And I was, plus I have kids, and I thought, man, all that travel, there's no way I could be a parent do that. So, I skipped on that option. I thought, well, why not? Since there's such a rarity for women owned shops, why not just open one and maybe someone else will open one and then another, someone else will open one. And I don't know, like the chance that my shop opens inspires someone else to open one and makes them feel like she can do it, I can do it, you know, because I don't have a ton of retail. I don't have any retail experience, you know.
Yeah, so what though? We'll get into that. I don't know that retail is necessarily, in my view of you, the name of your game necessarily. Game either.
God, no, no.
I don't play the retail game. I that's in my notes. It is a concept of retail, and we'll touch on it. But good. Like, yeah, so right, whatever, okay. Retail, you know how to like read numbers. You can do math.
Yeah, yeah. Thank God for QuickBooks and Lightspeed.
Right, there's all kinds of tools to like keep you in line, POS systems, things like that. It's good to have somebody watching your back if you're learning it, but for everybody, you know, and like you said, if you don't, who's gonna, you know? Yep. Maybe it not like in an altruistic sense, I'm not meaning it, but if you were just sat there and waited for another lady to do it, to inspire you, where does that end?
Yeah.
You know, or begin, maybe it's like the rainbow, you know, you're never gonna find the pot of gold because nobody ever gets there.
Who knows, yeah.
Right. So Frontier Bikes, what would you say, I said woman owned and operated. What would you say is more the actual, I kind of view that as like a mantra or a, I don't know, you might be able to explain that, you will be able to, but what's like the concept and the mission of Frontier? Because it's not just like we only serve women, right? Yeah. You serve everyone.
Yes.
So what's the representation? I don't know. I get them all. I could go everywhere with it.
It sort of feels like having to label it or put it in a box. What is it? What's its definition? You know,
I'm cool with that. I get you. Maybe the mission was planting the flag and riding it as long as you want to ride it, you know?
You know, the mission was, here's the thing. The mission was to create a space that I felt safe in. And I felt that I could, if I was working in a space that made me happy and made me feel safe, then that's just gonna culminate a culture for other people as well and draw in other people. And man, I mean, I'm a smiler. I smile with my eyes and like my whole body smiles. And, you know, I was like, this is going to be good because people are going to walk in whatever they're, however they identify, and they're going to just see a happy person working on their bike. And that's just in and of itself going to be what draws them in. And then we tell people no dumb questions. Questions are questions. You know, if you have something going wrong with your bike, and then bring it in. And if you want us to just fix it, we'll fix it. If you want us to show you how to fix it, we'll show you. And if you want to do it yourself and we'll just guide you, do it. You know, the shop is, we don't define it. We don't put it in a box. It's for everyone to come and enjoy because we enjoy it. It offers different things like the spin studio. It offers the wrenching. We took what Velo Plus cut out of their shop when Marco took it over. Mm-hmm. We took their open shop and started doing it at ours. And we have had women's only shop nights, open shop nights, and we've packed the house and women love it. They get to come. We usually give discounts on merchandise those nights. You know, just making it so it's approachable and fun and welcoming. And that's really what it's all about. It's not about like, we are women owned and we're going to discriminate against men. I mean, we had a guy come in the shop and we have a little placard on our cash wrap that says girl boss on it. Cause you know, someone gave it to us and we're like, that's cute. Let's put it out.
Yeah.
And he was like, so what's this mean that you don't employ men? And I was just thinking like, man, dude doesn't get it. Like people who aren't aware that there are very few female owned bike shops, trans owned bike shops, you know, they just don't, it goes over their head. They miss the point, I guess.
It's like the unknown unknown. They don't even know. They don't know.
No. Yeah. You know, and there are a lot of guys who are offended by it. There are guys that are offended that we exist, which is really, really funny too. We get a lot, we're in the Midwest, we're in the heart of, you know, the Bible Belt and the blue collar, you know, we've got a lot of farmers around. We've got a lot of good old boys that pull up in their trucks and they got their kid's bike that needs to be fixed. And they come in, they're like, can I talk to the owner? Can I talk to the head mechanic? And I'm like, sure. And I like go in the back and come back out. And I'm like, how can I help you?
Right, you just know? Spin around once.
Woo! Yeah.
All right. Oh, it's me.
Yeah. So, you know, I have that playful smart aleckness that I can dish out, you know, which is funny. But I've got thick skin because I've always worked in a male dominated industry. Sports medicine is always guys. I was always the token female on trips with teams, always. And so I can handle it. It doesn't bother me. I've got, you know, that's what I'm comfortable with. And so I thought, why not? I'm probably good for the role. Let's go for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not sure how your roles in the shop all designate, but I have never turned a wrench with you personally, but I spent a whole DK weekend wrenching, and she'll hate me probably for bringing her up because she plays it pretty low key. But Sarah, one of your wrenches,
yes,
legit. I mean, I was bench to bench or stand to stand with her, and I was like, very impressed. And that's 20 years of being in the industry working with, and that crew always at DK, that's a rough weekend of just nonstop, like an onslaught of crazy, like, can you put new sealed bearings in my hub Friday? Yep. And it's like, what, you know? And she crusher, you know, so I'll shout out to her because she's legit as a person and super legit as a mechanic.
Sarah's been in it in the industry twice as long as I have. And that extra, you know, 50% of experience that she has on me, she's got the experience working on all of the time trial bikes, all the triathlete bikes, all of the carbon high-end road bikes, you know, like the bikes that I would rather not touch because, you know, they're $15,000 bikes.
Delegate. You know? Delegation is responsibility.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Know what you can do. And...
No, she comes in on Saturdays. Those are her days to work. And I will save some of those higher end bikes for her to work on. One, because that's what she did forever. She's worked triathlons for a long time, and she worked on, you know, race bikes for a long time, and that's what she is so good at. And so I just set aside some work for her, unless it's, you know, basic repair, which, you know, like if it's a straightforward, quick something or the other on it, I can do it. And I'm happy to do it. But if it's like a full on take everything off and put it back on and do the tune up, Sarah loves doing that and she's really good at it. And so I'm like, go for it, bro. But if you get the, you know, the frame up steel, you know, threaded bottom bracket shell, custom build, I'm all over that.
Right.
That's my comfort level. You
the
put
wheelhouse.
The steel in. Yeah, for sure. Anything steel, I get my hands on, and that's my joy. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Sarah.
She's great. She's the best.
Primo. much respect.
Yeah.
So back to the shop thing. And you're talking about a safe place for people. And I'm just going to interpret it. And if I'm incorrect, you tell me. But I ran a shop that the slogan involved the terms building community.
Yeah.
And I have read in a lot of your interviews and this and things, I see the phrases, or, you know, examples of the phrase building community. And it seems to me that successful bike shops and the death of independent bike shops, the ones that can become what I've not always, but I've come to refer to as a community hub, forget retail, forget anything. Do you want to come have a cup of coffee and sit on a chair? Do what, you know, what do you need out of a place? Yes, we sell bikes. Yes, we tune up bikes. Yes, we do all kinds of crazy things. Who knows what happens in a bike shop? Am I interpreting kind of my own spin on what you're saying as more of like what I would call the hub for community, which could be as small as next block or as large as, I guess, globally at this day and age, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about safe means you can roll in and shoot the shit and talk about whatever, bike related or not, building relationships with your customers, knowing what their dog's name is. It's knowing what type of bike they own, whether they bought it through you or not. It's about maybe connecting those people with other customers that you know might be a good riding buddy fit. That's a big one, is like Beth introduced me to my favorite riding buddy, you know, and that's, you know, in networking people together, not just creating the space, but, you know, it's just a web, it's a tree that keeps growing and branching off and it doesn't, it's not restricted to just the shop. It translates into our events that we host. We collaborate with another small shop in Kansas City that is owned by a friend of ours, bike shops don't usually work together on community events that we see here anyway. Like, they don't collaborate or put on anything fun. And I'm not afraid to reach out and be like, hey, we should use your space for this thing. And it doesn't make me nervous that might bring them business instead of me, because we're the ones hosting the event and people are going to remember like, hey, that's cool. Like, it's not about making big bucks. It's about bringing people together and having a good time on the machines that we get the pleasure of working on and servicing regularly if they decide to go with us. And maybe they'll think of us, you know, after that event. But mostly it's about the experience. I mean, riding bikes is about experiences.
That's why we're doing it.
Yeah.
I think that here in Iowa City, people are really lucky that there's a lot of shops. Like, within a half an hour span, there's probably 9 or 10 shops. And we're not talking like Kansas City size, you know, but they all pretty much chill and play together. The only Fat by Grace in Iowa City, or the first one, was 2-shop collab. It's really cool. And I think that's, it's not 4 walls that constrict this mentality. It is all representations everywhere you go. You know, I think that the hard thing that, I'm waving too, but I think the hard things for some shop owners can be, you can create this, but then you kind of have to let it rock, right? Like, you can't control, too much control is not welcoming. It becomes intimidating, or it becomes, and where I'd go with that is the retail. You know, so many times I hear people say, I don't hang out at the shop X, whatever it may be, because I think they expect me to buy something. And I don't think they're insane. It is a retail setting. But to me, that's not where the bike shop fits.
Right.
And I think you and I are very much, even without talking about it, on the same page of those kind of ideals, where it's like, yes, when I earn your trust, when we get respect that is mutual and we establish a relationship, money will come and go, because it's money. That's what it's supposed to do. Yeah. But longevity will be established, and, you know, those things will be done for all of us to reap the benefits of.
Yes. Because if you don't have a relationship with the person that you're with the person who owns the business that you're spending money in, then the idea of supporting someone, you know, it brings more value than if you don't know the person, you might as well just shop online. So, you know, I could go into a corporate store and see a bunch of things that are shiny and great, and I like that, and I could buy that. But I'm more likely to walk out the door if, you know, I don't know the owner and I don't feel like, you know, I had a valuable conversation with an employee. I feel like I'm just walking through, you know, another store, versus, you know, you have a customer who comes in and they're like, I was just at this corporate store and it was cold and brightly lit and it felt, you know, it felt like a store.
Music playing. You know, right. That BS crap you just want to run from.
Yeah, seriously. You know, they come in to Frontier Bikes and popcorn is popping when, you know, we're allowed to serve popcorn. And, you know, it smells good. There's, you know, a PBR fridge in the corner and we're just tinkering, wearing hoodies. And, you know, we probably have Run the Jewels playing on the radio or something cool. And then that just for people is like, oh, this feels like home. And these people seem cool. And you can get behind someone who is a member of the community. You know, I live in the town that I own the shop in and my kids go to school here. And that's something that you want to support, is this woman's busting her buns trying to make this operation stay afloat. Let me buy from her. And it may be a little bit more expensive because it is, you know, in a small business, but
maybe nicer too.
Probably nicer and probably more thought out when it was purchased.
Maybe more exactly what you actually needed.
Maybe, yeah.
Crazy how those correlate. More expensive than what you actually need.
Yeah, I mean, the small shops always carry those unique items that the corporate stores don't, that are going to make your bike ride, that you're going to make your, one, your bike look more unique, and two, your experience more unique. You know, you don't want to just slap on the same stuff that every other Specialized or Trek rider has on their bike, because all their stuff is the same, you know, whereas, you know, we carry some unique products through, you know, other small MUSA brands, you know, which is great.
Yeah, the ladder there, you know, small supports small, and there's a cost to pay to play the game. But when you, my whole reputation is staked on, if you buy into that and you talk to the right people, the duration of that product and it's excelling all your expectations is way more constant.
Yes. Now, I don't want to say that I don't want to knock on the corporate stores too much, because there are a lot of great big five brands that have ambassador programs for women that just they're able to implement those because of how big they are, and it gives, you know, Jane down the street an opportunity to be more involved in something and than she could at my shop, because I don't have these huge ambassador opportunities for folks. So I want to cheer that on. That's always a really great opportunity that they can provide that fills a void that maybe I can't fill at my small level, my small size. So there are pros and cons.
Yeah, I used to think of some of the shops that I associated and even brands that I associated with as, you know, you may not perceive us as your first bike kind of shop, you know, and if the entry, because of cost or any limitation, get on something, I don't care what it is. But as you start to get more inquisitive and want tailoring, at least branch out also where you go. And if you stop to me and you give me the time and I give you the time, you might just keep coming back, you know, like, again, not to poo-poo any of that. I spent a few years, a year managing a Shields All Sports service shop. It was awesome because I was young and I had access to everything, tooling-wise and stuff.
Yeah.
But as my preference changed for how to take care of people, my path changed. But it doesn't mean that wasn't valuable, and that I personally think I sold great bikes to people via that bigger box store of the big brands, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, at least the mechanic is putting the bikes together.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I did pretty high-end work when I was still there. The whole shop did, and they went everywhere. They're awesome. Yeah. And one thing I was going to talk about, you know, we feel like, as I guess maybe mechanics, that we are always like, look, people can't look at me, but I'm like heavier set. I have tattoos that are silly. I have a big old beard, this and that. It's like I play the role almost, you know, I've just done it so long. I just look like this.
Yep.
Do you feel like in Frontier, people come in looking for like, you see them just looking around like, it's just like blowing their mind. You can see like steam coming out of their ears almost kind of thing. They're looking for the dirty me and they see you. Equally, if not more valuable, depending on the customer, but just the expectation.
Always. Yeah. If they can see me behind the repair stand.
When you said the girl boss thing, that's what I just imagined this huge, huge good old boy. And then you just be like, yep, that's me. Smudge some grease on your face. Does this make it easier for you?
No, I don't even always dress the part. I mean, yeah, I'm usually in a hoodie or a zip up and jeans or cut off jean shorts. But, you know, sometimes I'm in like, you know, a dress shirt with an apron and like black leggings, you know, and I don't, you know, sometimes I dress up because I like to feel good, you know, and I feel
absolutely
good.
Absolutely.
You know, you feel good, you're in a good mood. And, you know, there have been times where guys walk in, they're like, yeah, where is the bearded guy? Where is the green monkey? Where is the, you know, and I'm sitting here like bobbing my ponytail, like, hey guys, let's talk bikes. You know, hey, look at me. Oh, I work on bikes. And they're like, you gotta be kidding me right now. This lady, who's this lady? She's a cheerleader. She's just like stoked to be here. And I'm just like, what do you got? What do you ride? Yeah, let's do it. You know, and
I'm sure your constant energy level doesn't contribute to that whole situation at all. You know,
oh man, there are some guys who, man, they just, they're like, so, but you know, it after a while, the first impression that people have when they come in, they see myself or Sarah is, you know, obviously we're the ones there. Sarah and I both have our hands covered in grease and muck and grossness and wearing a shop apron or not, whatever. But you know, once they get to know us and then we talk about, you know, geometry or, you know, parts and, you know, specs and things like that on bikes and try and help them pick a repair part on something and talk the lingo, then they're like, oh, okay, I can relax. And they know what they're talking about. So at first sight, no, it's confusing. Once they get to talking to us, they're pretty comfy.
Yeah. Just give you the chance, right?
Can I grow a beard? I'll just start growing a beard.
That's a great plan. I'm holding you to it. Hey, we're going to take a break so I can get some more coffee and come back with Beth. We're going to talk some other kind of, I think they're included, but side things that she does. Talk a little bit more about how we get the groundswell going of more people, period, on bikes, valuing local bike shops, but then pyramid up. And of course, I'm going to subject her to the lightning round. Bow, bow, bow. Take a break and we'll be right back. Everybody, we are back with Beth Morford, owner and mechanic at Frontier Bikes. I had to take a break to get some coffee. Beth, do you have anything to drink?
I do. I do have something to drink.
What are you having?
I'm having a Breckenridge Brewery Strawberry Sky.
Breckenridge Brewery Strawberry Sky. It's 2:30 p.m. on whatever day today is.
On my day off, okay? On my day off.
Awesome.
It says it's a fruit-forward Kolsch-style ale with a delicate finish.
It's probably got vitamins or something.
It's healthy. Yeah,
basically.
It's strawberry. It's fruit.
Yeah, that is a fact. No one can dispute that. Strawberry is a fruit. So we've been talking to Beth about the Frontier Bikes, the shop, some more ideas in regards to a shop. But one thing that I want to bring up that's maybe like a, I don't know if you'd call it a side gig through the shop, is you are a frame builder, a certified frame builder, not like I had a jig in a garage, went to frame building school in Colorado.
Correct.
And you do bespoke frames. Is that what it's called?
Bespoke,
yeah. Well, it's like cube thigh.
It is like cube thigh.
Correct. No one will get that, and I'm not editing it out. what we touched on, you know, I noticed on your webpage on the Frontier Bikes, it links to it, and you mentioned you're 5'3"-ish, and that finding bikes that fit you correctly is harder, and maybe not as bad in some genres now, but still pretty hard when you're in the 46, 49, 51, 52 range, you know. And you've already mentioned your love of steel things. So take us through bespoke frames and I assume completes facilitated through the shop, and we'll do kind of social stuff later. But tell us what that's all about.
Billet braised. Billet.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And where'd you go to school?
I went to Yamaguchi in Rifle, Colorado.
Awesome.
It was a frame building and stem building course. Whoa. And the frame that the road bike that I built there was the fork is handmade, the stem and the frame is handmade. So it was a all in one. It was everything. So
segmented fork.
Unicrown fork.
Unicrown.
Mm-hmm. And
I have a thing for segmented forks.
Segmented forks are beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I bet they're a pain to make though.
Oh my gosh. I have not made one yet, but eventually. So we built a road bike there, and that was a difficult course to take. Only because Koichi's accent, he's Japanese. He still has a very thick accent. And I was thankful he gave me a frame building class book when I was done, because I always refer to it on things. But what got me inspired into frame building was meeting Julie Petalino. She at the time lived, up until just a couple months ago, lived in Lenexa, which is a suburb of Kansas City. And she was introduced to me through Velo Plus, and we just hit it off. And she's like, I was like, can I apprentice? She's like, yeah, you should apprentice with me. And so for that 2017 year, I met with her in her garage and watched her build, and she built me a bike. We co-built, meaning like I did like two or three fillets.
Counts.
but on the Star Trek bike, which is mine. And boy, it is, steel is real. There's nothing like riding a bike that was built for your body and is made of a material that is forgiving and supple. And it's a versatile bike. It is a plus size gravel bike, maybe. All road, whatever you want to categorize it as these days. I can run it geared. I can run it 2x, 1x, single speed. It's beautiful. It's got rocker dropouts by Paragon, and which I love. And yeah, it's a beautiful bike. But that launch, she was the one who encouraged me to go to Yamaguchi, and I was like, sure, why not? Let's pay the $3,000 and rip the band-aid off. And so I went and did that, and I came back, and we both went to Philly Bike Expo in 2017 and exhibited the Star Trek bike along with her a few other bikes that she brought. And I got to like wine and dine with friends and like people that I got to meet in the industry. And it was nice because going through frame building school and being fresh out of it like a month and a half prior, I could talk to people about
things. Yeah, you're firing, you're ready to go.
Yeah, it was fresh and it was still new, but at the same time I didn't feel like a total dummy. And so that was a really good experience. And then it was after that where I was like, I need to do something. It either needs to be a bike shop or a frame building business. And I thought, if I do the bike shop, then I get to utilize all my skills right up front. And then the frame building can be built into it. And
you can be in control of every aspect too. You don't have to send your frame somewhere to get assembled or faced,
right?
Or, you know, who paints it? You know, I'm way into that kind of stuff.
Yes. So I've been so busy building the shop up the last 2 years since 2018 when we opened, focusing on, really, if you think about it, we were open all of 2018 and all of 2019, and then COVID hit. And so that year and a half to 2 years of building community, which is not a long time, it's a very short amount of time, trying to build a business and a reputation, social media presence and marketing and things like that. That's a lot for one person. I mean, it's me with Sarah on Saturdays. I mean, it really was been a busy lady. And so the frame building has just been on the back burner until I went to PBE last year. And they did the SRAM Ambassador Scholarship. Was the first year they did it. And I got to meet Brooklyn Fowler of SRAM while I was there cheering Julie on. And Brooklyn was like, you need to apply. You've got to take the frame building off the back burner and you've got to apply, because we really, like, I was talking to Danielle Sean. We're like, I don't know anyone to refer to this scholarship program. Like, right. I can't count on one hand the number of women who build frames. I can't even count two or three. And so she's like, you got to apply. Julie's like, you got to apply and you got to just, you got to make it happen. Get whatever tools left that you need. Build bikes. Play. Yeah. So I applied and boy golly, I got it. And so then COVID hit and put everything on the back burner. And so I've just been mostly doodling geos and practicing my fillet work and trying to hone in all that stuff so that when I do finally lay the final fillets on something that I've mitered and thrown up in the jig, then it's ready to rock and roll. So I don't pump out frames. I just haven't had time. I just don't have time to stop. And then, you know, everyone, it was funny. We should talk about bike shops and COVID, but we did that on another podcast with Pathless Pedal. So COVID hit and things changed this year. I think the dynamic was different. We were busting buns in service. You know, the bike shops were really popular. It wasn't like a pivotal year for us financially because we're so small that we ran out of bikes really fast. Then parts ran out and then it was just sort of like cruise control. So, but yeah,
it's got to provide I just got all these things. Russ and Laura, legit too. My wife and I survived our honeymoon alongside them at the Ochoco Overlander. Ask them about that one. Death for 4 days. Brutality. I want to touch on steel, the term steel. And I just to talk about frame building in general and respect for it. I got to go into Tom Teasdale's garage a few times at like the time that he was not seeing people. And what I gained from his, I didn't get to apprentice, but the thought and the meticulousness maybe of what he wanted to put out when you really learned, you know, he'd look at stuff and show me stuff. And I'd be like, it looks exactly the same to me. He'd be like, nope, this is not acceptable. This is. And I'm like, I don't know. You know, like, whoa, I look at a lot of bikes and I don't even see what you're talking about. But when you say steel, right? Like steel, kind of an umbrella term. We've got companies like Reynolds, companies like Columbus, 4130 Chromoly, different maybe lends to different kind of welding techniques or attachment techniques. Do you have a preferred, because I would assume the steel for you is not the same steel for me necessarily, if we're really wanting to tune ride quality. Do you have preferential steels or steels that you're just like, nope, too thin, not going to work, just not going to do it. I get weight, but I'm not doing it.
Not necessarily, you know, this is what I do. I'll send an email to Bike Fab Supply. And I'll be like, this is what I'm going to be doing anyway, because I haven't been really building. And I don't have a ton of experience picking and choosing tubing just yet. I like to defer to, you know, the experts and, you know, I'll just give a little profile of the rider that's going to be riding the bike, what it's going to be used for, and just go off their recommendation. If it fits the budget and it works for that rider, then I'll work with it. That's my plan.
I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, how do you know without just having the materials to like build 50 protos of all these different materials, and still that's only getting you feedback on you, you know? I always think it's interesting when people, I don't want to crap on steel is real, but it's like, man, that's a pretty broad statement to me, you know, as far as like 4130 Chromoly is not Reynolds 825 or Columbus Zona. They're just not the same, you know?
Yeah, no, you're going to get different ride quality for sure. It's going to feel different. So the responsiveness or the, you know, the feel from the wheels up through the frame is going to feel different. And the weight of the bike is going to be different. And it's going to differ. There are higher end tubing tubes that you could buy. There are, you know, the straight gauge 4130 that I've just been hacking on in my garage and amazing for fun because one, it's you know, cheaper, and two, you know, it's accessible, you know, for the most part, and it's there. So I've got a bunch of stock that Julie gave me that, which, you know, she kind of, when she moved off, she's like, take all the spare stuff and practice. I honestly just roll it out on my alignment table, make sure it's straight, check the butting on every single tube and clean it up and miter it and make sure I, you know, don't go past the butt ends, you know, where I'm not supposed to. And it's going to be a huge learning curve. It's frame building is like nonstop learning, including the material you're working with. So
And geo refinement.
I'm never going to pretend to know everything. I'm never going to pretend like I'm going to make the hugest mistakes. I'm going to make, you know, this next year is going to be like a straight up learning curve, which is fine. And that's what I want people to know. That's what I want other women to know is, you go to these expos and all these guys know everything about everything, and it's intimidating. They're all nice. It's not that they're scary. It's just they know a lot and they've been doing it a long time and they're there for a reason. And but that's scary. That's scary. You want to be able to be vulnerable and transparent and be like, I'm showing this bike and I built it, but I could bet you right now I asked 40 people advice along the way when I was doing it. You know, you bet your butt I was messaging Danielle or Julie or whoever, you know, other builders in the industry. How the heck do I do this? Or what would you do? Or I'm going to send pictures of my fillets to them and be like, yes,
Critique,
no.
right?
Yeah, critique. Yeah, it's that it is a safe environment. And they're, that's what people need to know that are scared to approach it. Like I'm going to tell you, I don't know everything about steel tubing. So.
Yeah, and utilization of resources is a sign of awareness. I mean, putting the right decisions in the right hands is not in my mind, not conceding anything. It's just growth potential. Why would you just want to bang your head against the wall without knowing when you have a buddy right over here that can pretty reliably tell you the answer? Not every time. At some point, they got to say, listen, just write it down or something, you know? But you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I get, I know,
And I
totally.
used to joke that, like, if my mom wasn't my mom, I would not be who she approached in a bike shop. You know, if she walked into a bike shop and she wasn't my mom, I don't know that I'd be the one that she gravitated to, let's say, you know? And so regardless of the delivery, you know, anything, the being on the same plane, respect, all that, sometimes people just want to talk to somebody looks like them, sounds like, you know, whatever it may be, relates to them a little differently.
I agree. It's approachable. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I don't want anyone to ever feel intimidated or, you know, and I'm not, yeah, not having all the answers is refreshing. And it's, yeah, it makes people more comfortable with asking questions they may not ask, you know, who knows? They're going to ask a different question to me than they'd ask Adam Sklar or someone else who's been doing it for a little while, maybe. Because, you know, Adam knows a lot. He's not an intimidating person by any means. Very approachable, but just having all those skill sets and not knowing, versus, you know, someone who's launching in just in the beginning. I mean, that's why I talked to Danielle and Julie because, you know, they were fresher and younger and women and, you know, they were just like, dude, you want to learn? Learn. There's no dumb question. And I don't know it either. They're the first ones to say, I don't know everything, which is the type of
You
person you want
cannot
to
know
talk to.
everything in bikes. It changes every couple days.
All the time. Yeah. It's insane. It's insane that you say that bicycles change all the time. But man, I was just having this conversation the other day about how all bikes are looking the same lately. How are things
Only
changing?
for a couple years, you know, and then it'll switch again.
I know. Yeah, it's
That's
true.
just, you know, I used to stress to shop employees, you don't have to know all the answers and don't even pretend, but you should know how to find the answers. And if you honestly communicate with the person you're engaged with, I don't know, but I know I can ask such and such and they will know. That is not a down credit to anybody. That's an uptick to me, you know, the honesty and the resourcefulness. So yeah, I just want to make sure I'm framing you know, what I mean is like, this is absolutely the way I would also pursue this. People know, ask them, they'll tell you. Why would you just dumb around, you know?
You know, it's sometimes that's hard for people. There are people out there who just aren't comfortable asking questions. I mean, that gets them out of their comfort zone. They're shy or introverted. And it gives, you know, maybe doing something like that gives them anxiety or stage fright. But like, that's the one thing you're, if you want to build or be in the bike industry, you got to be willing to step out of your comfort zone and ask questions and constantly evolve and learn and be brave enough to try things maybe you weren't comfortable doing before you were in the industry. You know, you gotta be able to adapt.
Absolutely. So. I would say my bike shop journey has been ebbs and flows of ups and downs, you know, 20 years of ups and downs, some of them longer than others, but it's what it is, you know.
Yep.
There's a certain amount of resiliency, I think, to be exist in the bike industry long enough. So Beth, are you prepared for the lightning round?
The finger guns.
The guns. They're lightning guns. I figured that out. They're lightning guns.
Lightning cannons.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my God. I've never done a lightning round.
Most people haven't. This is world renowned, I think. It's not probably, but in my mind, it's basically like quick answer stuff. Like yeah. Four questions, pretty quick. Stuff.
Oh God.
Are you ready? You might not want to take a drink of that strawberry juice.
Let me shotgun it real quick.
It's already open. You're too late.
Okay.
Rock and roll. Favorite Star Trek character?
Han Solo.
Star Trek.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Oh my
Star
God.
Star Trek. Listen, people. She knows. I know she knows. That's why I'm asking the question.
No, I didn't hear you.
Favorite Star Trek, and I don't know if there's like Babylon 5 or New Generation, all that. Just overall Star Trek, and Han Solo for me too, because he's sweet in Star Wars.
Star Wars is Han Solo.
Yeah, no doubt. Barely edges out Chewie.
Star Trek is Captain Picard.
Picard. Ooh, you're a Picard guy. Not a Shatner.
Yeah.
Not a Shatner. Yikes.
No.
What do you think is the biggest misconception before or right after you walk in the door of Frontier Bikes that a general person might have?
That the owner is not there.
That's a big one. I think that means like we could have a podcast on that. This two-parter, so prepare. Favorite snack on and off the bike?
Haribo gummy bears, gold bears, the gold bears by Haribo.
Either way, it's just no matter what.
I have some open right now.
My wife used to keep a gummy bear jar here, but I would eat them all.
I have some open on the side. You can hear the package.
Proof is in the pudding, people. She's shooting me straight.
So good.
I'm a coffee guy. I take in way too much. How many cups of coffee do you think is too many in one day?
I say if you're exceeding a pot on your own, 12 cups, you should probably cut back. Yeah.
Noted.
Crap. Are you drinking more than 12 cups a day?
Who gets 12 cups out of a pot of coffee? I get 4 of these.
Well, that cup is like 3
it's
cups.
A cup.
It's a cup, it's a vessel.
Okay, well, noted. Beth says get help. Anyways, I'm jacked. Beth, you're awesome. People, you know, I know you. We've got the time to chat at trade shows, and when I was in Emporia, we kind of crossed paths, and like I said, the Sarah connection, but everyone thinks that this is all like my really good buddies, and they are 2 degrees, but more of it is my appreciation for what these people are purveying to my wife, Jessica specifically, or cyclists in my community or things like that. So this is no joke. This is the longest conversation I guarantee we've ever had. I'm sure, because trade shows, it's like, what's that?
I hope people stayed tuned in.
Well, they will. They don't. They just put it on and it goes in the car and we get the listens. It's all good. So I would just really appreciate your time. I love your views on a shop. I'm so in line. I feel like in my own way of doing very similar things. And I hope this leads to being able to pick your brain, you know, because there's bike shop stuff in my future. And just like we talked about, if I think people are doing it well, maybe I'm just brash or whatever, but I will ask them, what do I need to do to establish this? Cause you know, and you know, so it's really cool and I appreciate it. How do people find you? Your Instagram and stuff, the messages are pretty funny. So how do they find you and Frontier on the gram, Facebook? Does people use Twitter anymore?
They do, I guess. Yeah, they do use Twitter.
Well,
I
don't, if you got that, you go ahead and tell us that too. Your Venmo account, whatever they want to send you money, whatever, you know?
Heck yeah. Yeah. There are a few people that owe us that $10.
Yeah, right. Just go ahead and PayPal, or we'll put it right in the links underneath the video or the audio. Yeah,
we'll send that mansplain bill to a few people we know.
That's right. $100,000, folks. $100,000 if you mansplain. And if I have to mansplain that, just don't even walk through the front door because you're going to be in debt.
That's right. Yeah.
How do people find you?
We're on Instagram. It's at Frontier_bikes. We try to keep things light. We sometimes put a what's in the stand up there. We try and, you know, I don't know. It's random stuff. And then we have a Facebook account as well for the shop. It's Frontier Bikes on Facebook. It's frontierbikes.com. It's our website.
To Bespoke when the frames get moving and that when you're rocking and rolling, that would be the place for that.
Yes, is the website. Yeah, we'll start updating that and getting people in touch with us. The website link is on our Instagram and Facebook as well. People can message us any way they want. Instagram, Facebook, or send an email. So
Carrier pigeon,
t-shirt cannon. They can shoot t-shirts. They can mail us.
Slingshot used to be one of my favorites.
Slingshot's good. Yeah, they can mail us a check in the mail.
Yeah.
So
back to getting that money. I'm AmBlake50 on Instagram. I'm Adam Blake on Facebook. Don't know how they let me have that one. And this is going to be on fat-bike.com. If you're listening, you already know that because you got here. But this ain't just fat bikes. Gravel, shops, adventure, mentality, whatever. I can do whatever I want. And I can have people like Beth giving me their time, which I appreciate, so we can let you know, at least in my world, what's real deal, you know, things that I think about way too much. So I appreciate you letting me kind of purge my brain on some of this with you, and check them out. It's legit. And go on Friday, Sarah, work on your bike. I'd take my bike there on a Friday for her. Thanks, everybody. New podcast. Check us out later.